it's a day for leaks. Leaks here, leak there, leak everywhere. And then there's the upcoming one. The one which happened today, reported by lawyer.net. Actually, it was reported much earlier by another news website, but somehow with lawyer, it became viral. It's the JPN of National Registration Department's data leak, whereby 4 million citizens' data has been breached and the information is now up for sale for only 35,500 ringgit.
Welcome to the Security Lab Podcast.
Oh, interesting. Okay. JPN, my God. How does it happen? Okay, so let's look at who shared this information. Mad props to Anand Shuko, aka Xander, for sharing this information with all of us. I mean, if it's not for his work monitoring dark web, we wouldn't have this piece of information out in the open. And again, props to lawyer.net for making it viral for the right reasons, right? So thank you very much. So let's look at the breach and who is affected. So Kat, you mentioned there was 4 million records. Now, these records date between 1979 to 1998. So, which means that I assume that this would be date of birth or people with their IC starting with 79 or 98, because the Malaysian IC number uses the last two digits of the year of your birth. So, in exception to me and Sky, which we are very sure we are much older than these given dates. I don't know about Kat and Prof. You folks might be much younger and maybe in this data.
I'm revealing my age, but I can safely say that I'm not covered. I'm totally safe from this.
So you're either too young or just too young. Full stop.
I'm matured. I'm matured. Mm. That's all, and that's how I shall describe it and leave it at that.
Hey, but guys, the data was supposedly coming from Inland Revenue and not from JPN, you know.
Okay, so there's some confusion about where the data is coming from. The data source is from a provider called My Identity. So My Identity is supposed to be an API or an application programming interface where you make a call and you get data related to that particular person, the details, you know, so that if you go into any government agencies, all you need is, say, your IC number or your IC once you do your verification, all your data is pulled from a central database. So My Identity acted as a bridge between JPN and LHDN. So this point of time, we don't know where this data happened, and I believe, where this leak happened. And I believe that PDRM came out late this evening and said that we do suspect that it may be an insider information. Honestly, I don't think anyone outside would have access to such an API. If they do, then, you know, is it something that anyone and everyone can query? So I hope that's not the case. And I sincerely hope that they would have protected that data. And it's only for a few people. Because based on the dark web listing and some description given in there, it says that, it's using this, can I say antiquated or not so new system on My Identity. And that's how that data came out, right? So interestingly, what is released? full name, first name, last name, your national IC number, your mailing and your permanent address, your mobile number, and your email address. So interestingly, someone commented, you know, I could change, I can move house, I can change my mobile phone, I can change my email address, but it's going to be difficult for me to change my IC number. So yeah, it's not something that anyone can go and say, hey, I'm on a breach, so I want you to change my IC number, because that's kind of like permanent identifier formulations in general.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've said it before and I'm going to say it again. Nobody asked me before whether they could use my birth date to form part of a very important identifier, which is my IC number. You know, I, right from the beginning, if I were given an option, I would say, no, don't use that as my personal identifier number. So in this case, I think from what you have just shared, it seems that number one, cyber attack is not a prerequisite for data leakage. And although we have a lot of guidelines and laws in place, how data is handled differs very much in every company. Nothing is foolproof. So in this case, what we have is just superficial control over the things that we hold very, very dearly to us, like our information. So in this case, the prevention that we have is only as good as the human and policies governing it. So it doesn't really guarantee and safeguard anything at all.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. I'm very curious, actually. Okay, for the IT savvy folks in this room, the three of you, what is my identity actually? Is it an API? Is it a platform, or is it a database? What exactly is it, and why does it sound as though the public is able to access it? Is that right? Would that be correct?
I think that calls for Doc to.
I don't think it's available for everyone, which is what I mentioned much earlier. Mm. It's more of to enable data sharing from JPN, which is the central database, into all other government agencies. So which means that, okay, I want to share all this information. You make a call, you give me some basic information. Based on the data that you give me, I will return back to you whatever subset of data you require. Now, today we don't know exactly how this API works. There is no public information. The website was taken down by GITN at about 11:30, 11:40 today. Earlier it was available. Then what they did was they nullified all the DNS lookups. So they went to the DNS and removed all the DNS settings. That's it. You can't access the data. But we use something called the Wayback Machine in archive.org. We were able to make out very interesting information about what was there on that website. And I would like to quote certain things that I saw on that website. So we looked at their security policy. Sorry, even before that, before the site went down, we did a check. It was using a software called Joomla. It went live in June 2012. Looking at the Wayback Archive, doesn't seem like that site was maintained very much. You see updates very sporadically after months, not so much frequently. They have a page called Dasar Keselamatan, which means security policy, and it's only two lines. Essentially, what it says, and I'm translating it into English, is that we will use whatever necessary security controls that are feasible. Full stop. Now, that's it. I'm still okay with that. Now, if you go to the bottom of that page, there's a very interesting piece of text. Okay. Give me a short while. Let me pull that out.
I'm looking at the explanation of my identity, and it says here it actually links up JPN, immigration, road transport, Lembaga Hasil, Suruhan Jaya Pilihan Raya, Perkhidmatan Pelajaran, Polis Diraja Malaysia. So what with this type of breach, with this type of access, can you imagine if somebody is inside this particular platform, they basically own us already.
Yep. They will know who we voted for and
more. And with your full name, your IC number, and also your mobile number, I basically can craft out an attack on any individual that I want to. Because I can use your contact as a basis of trying to fish out your WhatsApp details so that I will be able to own your number, and then I can use your IC to do things that you don't want me to do. And subsequently, I could also try to see if I can own some of the banking information as well.
Well, yeah, I think you're right, Sky. This is a criminal mastermind at work. I mean, everything which you just described just now, yes, with the information that the hacker would have at their disposal, they would be able to craft out pretty sophisticated cyber breaches or cyber attacks, even social engineering. Maybe the scale of the data that was breached is not as huge as for the great telco leak of, I don't know how many years ago, but the variety of information, the variety of data that they have for this particular breach is wide, is a lot.
But to be fair, they still need to do a bit of work, lah. I mean, it's not like you can immediately craft out and you know, okay. Gather, but there's still some work to do.
Hear you then.
You have basically the tools to do it, lah. The data is there, you know, enough to do it. And I think the prof is getting more and more angry because you're talking about, you know, the identifier, which she insistently say no.
Yes, you are right. So angry that, you know, I find it hard to control myself so that I can speak properly.
Yeah.
You know, what you said is true. But number one, we don't have control over our own data. And number two, if you look at extent insight or knowledge, communication itself has a limit beyond which we cannot be error-free. So when you link so many entities together, this is a sure recipe for data leakage. Sorry. So in other words, what we have is, what we are going towards is that it will always leak. It will definitely leak. It's not a matter of whether it will or not, but a question of when it will.
When?
So we are talking about a disproportionate invasion to our rights, to our own information. What privacy do we have? We don't have any. We have pirates.
I forgot to mention Higher Education Ministry as well.
Exactly. And to that end, compliance alone is not enough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that's you, right? Okay.
Enjoying the show so far? Subscribe now so that you don't miss out on the latest episode. We are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many other platforms. Visit podcast.securitylaw.asia to get the links to subscribe.
Okay, so I'm back. So I'm going to read this text out word for word. It's in Malay. Penafian. Kerajaan Malaysia tidak bertanggungjawab terhadap sebarang kehilangan atau kerugian yang mungkin dialami akibat penggunaan maklumat yang diberikan. So if I translate this in English, I don't know, and I know you're not supposed to say denial, but maybe there's another word for it. Probably statutes of limitation or something like that. Malaysian government will not be responsible towards any loss that may be caused due to the usage of the data that's provided. So whether it's provided or not provided, somebody whacked the data, well, it's very clear here that Malaysian government now completely absolves its responsibility.
I didn't provide the data, they took it.
if I may, there's a for Lawyer, I think it's Lawyer Forum's post. It states here Malaysian citizen data fresh from Jabatan Pendaftaran Negara, JPN, leaked from hasil.gov.my through My Identity API. But what are the chances that the information that is accessible by the other government agencies like the Election Commission, the Road Transport Department and all that are also compromised? Any thoughts?
Election Commission already compromised. A couple of months ago, remember, there was a huge leak and interestingly leaked by the same person.
And you mentioned his name just now.
No, I didn't mention Adnan. Any names.
Oh, not Adnan, a different dude.
No, Adnan is the researcher who found it in Dark Web. So okay. It's not him. Please, he's a nice guy.
Okay, that's
don't go after the wrong person.
It was interesting, right? When this news was actually viraling on WhatsApp and all the communities, one of the reactions which kind of caught my attention, and I have to agree with it, is all that data only worth 35,000.
Yeah,
ringgit.
That's my comment in my group as well. I say I'm not surprised at the breach, frankly. I'm surprised at the value of the data.
Well, a lot of people say the data should have been sold for a higher price. But I guess from an attacker point of view, that is a decent amount. And it seems to me that based on the price he put there, he seems to know the Malaysian affordability. So indicates to me that this guy is definitely Malaysian and definitely knows the system. But we just don't know who he is. Sorry?
Do a facial recognition can find out, right?
Yeah. So the thing is this, we don't know if the breach happened because the API use, which is happening in the website, because hasil.org actually uses that API in the website. So we don't know if someone found a way to enumerate the API through the web interface, or someone actually used it in the back end, enumerated to pull it out. Because if I look at the range and how the data is displayed, it's kind of obvious that this person did a huge IDOR on the API, which means trying each one by one by one by one until he can't pull it out anymore. And he says, you know, I have enough data and I'm just going to make a point and that's it. So from that instance today, we don't know how the attack happened or from which angle. There are two possibilities. Someone abused the API from the front end, which means the website is vulnerable, or someone had access at the back end to do this pulling.
Well,
so that's the thing that they have to investigate and find out.
Yeah.
But there's so another next thing that I have been... sorry, you want to continue first?
I know, go ahead, Prof. Okay, I'll go after you.
The other thing that I have been asked, and in fact, I thought of that as well also, is the role of PDPA in this. Isn't that supposed to be some regulatory in place that protects the general citizen, ensure and give us assurance that our information is safe, especially with the government agency?
Oh, this I can answer. I was, in many moons ago, the chief privacy officer for a multinational doing implementations for PDPA. So one of my roles was to actually get close to the PDPA commissioner and we talked things about this. And when I asked him about, does PDPA cover government agencies? He said, no.
No, yeah.
Then I asked him, then what covers government agencies? Oh, we got so many other acts. You don't have to worry. We are well covered. This is for general public. So that was the explanation given at the point of PDPA launch. Now, with this, it's going to be an interesting case study to see how the law framework or the legal framework is going to be applied.
But then we need a debate on fundamental rights now.
Yes, it is, because the government holds the biggest amount of data.
Exactly.
And if there's no protection, then why go after all the corporate organizations when you can't even secure your own data? You know, you lead by example. You tell people how we do it and you get it done. So, for example, would be European Union.
And are we surprised at the price tag? That's the case? No, isn't it? That tells us a lot about how much it's worth.
I think it's it tells us about how much effort it took. Because for me, I think it probably came by very easily. So that's the reason why you don't want to put a high price tag. It's got nothing to do with the number of data, but rather the effort that is required to retrieve the data.
I can tell you how they do it. They would have identified the API points. They would have seen how the data goes between the server and the API. They would have tried to get all the fields. And then they just run an IDOR app at the back. So essentially an IDOR is just something that increments the number for each person's ID, just like how some of the earlier hacks happened. And because there's no proper checks and balance at the API, it would have just been blurting out all this data without proper checks. You know, maybe somebody was doing it late at night. You never know. Because if you do it during daytime, well, the API is going to slow down. Everybody's going to notice. It's not going to happen. So my guess is someone did it at night so that they can actually progressively pull data in the guise of batch processing. Mm. So that's how it may have happened. So now, the other interesting thing is we also see a statement from our beloved PDRM, Polis Diraja Malaysia. They came out with a statement and they said that we will try to block the sale of the goods. So this person has offered this set of goods for 0.2 BTC. What can the law enforcement agencies do to block? Well, technically, the only thing they can do is to go to our licensees for digital asset under SE, people like Luno and a few others, and tell this the wallet ID, block any transactions.
That would be interesting.
But the problem is, they are not the only people who can transfer to Bitcoin. There's so many other providers out there in the world who could even take, say, a credit card transaction and convert it and actually buy it. And that's perfectly fine. Some sites are blocked, some sites are not blocked. So you'll never know how these transactions happen. The only thing you would know is, okay, you know what is the attacker's wallet. You then know who the buyer's wallet. And the only thing is you have to de-anonymize either one for you to be able to catch this person. So what will happen is now, okay, if the money is transferred, the attacker has one problem. How is it going to encash that 0.2 BTC? Because the minute you go to any one of the exchange and say, I want to take out this money, you're screwed. KYC happens. Know your customer. They record your information. They record your wallet information. They give you cash. You are bye-bye.
Okay.
Long story short.
This sounds similar to how the Colonial Pipe ransomware gang was caught. Because the cryptocurrency exchanges and the wallets require for their information to be known or their identity to be known, so they were tracked down. On the plus side, I do not know whether there's any good news or not, but apparently the seller is someone who is said to be based in Puchong Stango. So they identified his location, but I'm not sure whether it will do PDRM any good.
It's probably a cyber cafe.
Puchong Stango is quite big. He probably uses a cyber cafe like Starbucks.
It's probably a cyber cafe, yeah.
If he's dumb enough to use his home internet, then I would make a case study out of that, man.
Yeah, man.
Why? You know, first thing I ask you, why? Should I sell you a book on operational security? Probably I should.
It's so, probably a cyber cafe or Starbucks somewhere.
True. Now, this is a developing story. So there's a lot of parts of jigsaw puzzle that's still moving that we are uncertain. Maybe we might revisit this in another date.
And
have a closure to this issue. Because I guess everybody's wondering, you know, what's going to happen? You know, with so much of data out, we had the Great Telco hack. Then we had Sayakana hack, aka Great Telco hack. We had a long chat with Keith Rosario. And now we're having this. Maybe Keith might come back again with another website and says, is your IC in there? But, well, I guess we would know that everybody's IC should be there between 1979 and 1998.
Okay.
Maybe my youngest son's IC, yeah.
Thanks for joining us this week on Security Lab. Make sure to visit our website at securitylab.asia, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss a show.